2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Afternoon, everybody. This is your DFS Army Daily Dispatch brought to you by DFSArmy.com, and I am your host, the one, the only, Boomer's Daddy. And as always, or at least 98% of the time, my co-host, Al Walsh, DFS. How you doing this afternoon, Al?
Wonderful, wonderful, and I love that you bring the 98% into it, because the last time you and I were on a pod together...
Seemed like 5 years ago.
Yes, back on, I believe Monday that was. But got rave reviews. I mean, a lot of people liked it. And, but yes, that was the role reversal where I was the host on that one. And you were the side guy on that one. But definitely a good time there on Monday. And I guess kind of what we did at the end of that show on Monday is what we're kind of piggybacking on today.
Yep, absolutely. This is your game theory analysis for week three. And basically what we're going to do here is we're going to steer away from the quote-unquote player picks because, let's be honest, you can get that from Kevin. He spends a lot of time doing his research, and he pretty much has it nailed down. What we're going to do is we're going to go through the actual game theory and analysis on tournaments, answer a couple questions. I know I got a big one that came to me last night that we're going to answer at the end, and kind of just talk about this weekend and how we're going to handle it, and kind of how to how at least from a game theory analysis for tournaments, kind of handle the ownership percentages and how to attack things. So
sure.
That's kind of what we're going to be doing today. It's Friday, brother. It is Friday.
So does that mean you have the 40 of Bud Ice right next to you?
Nope, it sure doesn't. That means it's crunch time.
Oh, okay. You have a granola bar. Nice.
Yeah, I actually had Arby's for lunch.
Ooh,
so.
All right. I always get down with a little Arby's. I actually did the cereal for breakfast and the salad for a lunch. Just went food shopping yesterday, so you know what it is. When you get the salad, you want to make sure you eat that first before everything, so it doesn't go bad.
Exactly. When my wife buys fresh fruit and stuff, then those are the first things to go.
Absolutely.
So anything that can go bad really quick or has an expiration date, I eat quick. So she always goes, she's like, well, it doesn't last until the next time. I was like, because I don't want it to go bad. I just feel like we're wasting money then.
Sure.
So, all right, let's start off a little bit by one of the major changes that happened this week in the industry over there on FanDuel. I know you, quote-unquote, don't play FanDuel.
No, you don't
NFL.
Even have to quote-unquote. I don't.
I do kind of want to talk about it a little bit because DraftKings has actually got the same thing going on. You can no longer play the Monday night slate or the Monday night game with the quote-unquote main slate. So you're talking about your major tournaments, your qualifiers, your big tournaments are all for that one day. I understand why they're doing it. I get it. I don't necessarily like it or agree with it. But from a business standpoint, I do understand it. But what I want to talk about is kind of how to handle it, because we have a unique situation this weekend where the highest total of the week happens to be the Monday night game.
Mm.
So,
you know,
real quick.
What sucks, too, is this also falls on the same night as the first Clinton-Trump debate. So definitely going to have the debate on the TV and the football on the computer. Going to be an action-packed Monday night.
I'm going to be staying off of Twitter that night.
I mean, look, I understand we got football. I got two of my division foes going up against each other on Monday night, but this presidential debate is just straight money in the bank, my friends.
Yeah, you're going to click over to that debate. You're going to miss something on the NFL game, and you're going to come back, and there's going to be 28 points scored already.
Might be a good bar night.
Yeah, I have a feeling that if I went to a bar that night, I would end up getting into a fight, too.
Yeah, well, I don't mind. Whatever. I haven't been in a fight in a while, so.
I pay attention to politics and stuff like that. I don't pretend to understand them in depth, so... as long as they don't take away fantasy sports or anything like that, I don't want to hear what Clinton and Trump have to say about what's going on in Tulsa and Carolina right now. So
fair enough.
Because that seems to be the hot topic that's going around this week.
I'll save all that for the presidential podcast coming out Monday morning.
There you go.
So
you should do a Tuesday morning one to recap it. All right, we spent way too much time talking about politics. Let's start talking about exactly how we're gonna handle doing that Monday night slate. I think for the obvious one, first off, is to handle jump in, especially over there on DraftKings, where you don't have to lock in your whole lineup.
Right.
Jump in the Thursday night contest so you can have exposure to all the games. But I also really, really, really like the idea of playing the Sunday Monday slate that they still have. Now it's not quite as big, but you still get them,
right?
And then they will end up putting out like a primetime slate where it's Sunday night, Monday night, and I wish they would do a Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night primetime slate.
That would be interesting. The big thing here is that typically when you do that Sunday Monday primetime slate for the two games, you're always going to have people putting more action on that first game just because they know there's going to be more, just action going on in the game. It's going to be interesting to see how people handle this. Like, obviously, we know Monday night's probably going to be one of the highest scoring games of the season. And then, I know we're going to have a lot of people probably put some unexpected ownership on that that Dallas-Chicago game just because they're antsy and they want to jump out ahead of these people. I know we're going to see it in some contests, but I think the best, smaller slate is over there on Fantasy Draft where you can do the 4 o'clock all the way up until the Monday game. I feel like there's better options out there. I feel like on DraftKings, it's just way too many GPP contests that have ridiculous amounts of multi-entry, and I don't know, I really don't like your chances over there on a smaller slate like that.
Yeah, that's why I love playing in the 3-entry max. I'll play those, depending on how comfortable I feel. I'll play those all the way up to the 150 level, I'll make 3 teams through all of them, no matter what slate I'm on. I make sure I'm in a lot of those 3-entry maxes. It keeps you away from the multi-entry, the mega multi-entry, and it keeps you away from the single entry. I really like what FanDuel does at the, I believe it's a $7 buy-in. For the main slate, they've got a 5 entry max. Yeah. They've got a couple of them. They've got one at $65. That's a 5 entry max. They've got one at a $7 buy-in, or maybe it's $15. I don't know. They've got a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I like the 5 entry. I also like the 3 entries, but I really like the 5 entries. I think that's kind of my sweet spot.
The guy on DraftKings who won the Monday to Thursday night contest actually had Jay Cutler as his quarterback. So
I threw Jay Cutler out there qualifier.
I had Jay Cutler across the board on my Monday through Thursday. Did not win. I basically wasted $50. That's okay. I had a pretty good weekend.
So, yeah. It's, one of those things you kind of just got to have fun with it. So.
Now, yeah, I mean, look, typically you want to get involved in this game somehow. I mean, look, this is actually a perfect opportunity to to have this game out of there. You know, like, I have a lot of great plays that I like this week that are probably going to go way over people's heads. But, you know, having that or not having this huge scoring Monday night game in the mix, I think it's kind of like not having Coors Slate on, or Coors Field on the slate. You know, like, I tend to do better when these big, you know, shootouts aren't on the slate, because I feel like I can find the value anywhere in there. So this is actually kind of a breath of fresh air to me that this game isn't on the regular slate this week.
Yeah, and not only that, you're not torn. You're not worried about, you know, exactly who to really kind of play. And, I mean, there's different ways to handle it.
Well, I was going to say, even last week, like, people...
FanDuel actually has a late Sunday, Monday slate as well.
Right. Well, with last week, too, I want to say is that, you know, people kind of feel like they needed to have exposure to that Saints-Giants game, and that's where a lot of people screwed up. And, you know, that we'll certainly... We might see that again this week with another game coming up.
Yep. And if you want our analysis and everything, then just ask us, and we'll gladly give you our 2 cents and opinion.
Mine's going to cost $10 a minute.
Yeah, it's you know, we've got our targets that we go to. Obviously, you know, Kevin does a lot of research and stuff, and I agree with Kevin on about 99.89% of his plays.
Oh, what a company man.
I am a company man. Too bad we don't have a ringtone or something to kind of explain it every time that we do the toe the company line. So, you know, there's a couple other ones out there that are oddball. I had a really, really good theory on why Jacoby Brissett was a good play last night, and it was working out great for 2.5 quarters.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, he got injured and hurt his thumb, and, you know, it just kind of became one of those things. So, had Jacoby Brissett in a couple lineups. They're not looking bad. The problem was that I had Julian Edelman and Martellus Bennett in one and Julian Edelman in the other one, and that did not look so good. So, it's, you know... I had a good theory, and if anybody wants to ask me about it, they can DM me. I had a conversation with Chop about it yesterday before the actual slate happened, just so he, you know, there was proof that if he went off for, like, you know, 25 FanDuel points that, you know, I did have a good reasoning behind it. So let's get into a little bit about how we're handling tournaments. I know you're a one lineup guy, correct?
Yes, more like last night, last week, that's how I did it. Week one, I did two and didn't have as big a profit. But, yes, I will typically go on the strength of one lineup.
Okay, and it's per site, per slate, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and you don't typically usually play cash games, do you?
No.
All right, good. So we can stick to the tournament side of things. There are a couple interesting plays today. Or this week. Obviously, we've got the ownership percentage will be updated in the cheat sheet on DFSArmy.com a little bit later. I believe Scotty's working on that right now. So let's go through some of these top-owned plays over there on DK that are projected. The top guy that's projected, obviously... because of the injury to Danny Woodhead, because of the fact that it's in one of the higher total games and it's a projected shootout, and because of the defense that he's playing, is Melvin Gordon. How are you handling Melvin Gordon this week?
You know, I think initial thought is that you have to have him in your lineup. He's got everything that you need from a running back. He's going to get his 20-plus carries, going to get red zone work. The pass catching... I see, you know, when you look at him as a whole, you know, in his season last year and in the two games this year, not catching a ton of passes, but that's with Danny Woodhead in the mix. I mean, I really like Indianapolis in this game. I think they're going to win this game easily. I have a couple thoughts on that, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But, I think that San Diego is going to have to throw this ball a lot. So that's where Melvin Gordon comes into play with the pass catching. I think he's a guy that... you start your lineups with this week. The fact that they're going against Indianapolis is just the icing on the cake. This guy is really nobody is in line behind him to steal any of his work. If you remember from college DFS last year, Kenneth Farrow from the Houston Cougars, he is in that San Diego backfield as well, so he might see a couple snaps, but nobody is threatening Melvin this week. And that's the one thing that I look at for a running back. Is he going to get all the work? Yes, Melvin Gordon will get all the work, so he will be in all of my lineups.
Yeah, I think where his price is hasn't reacted to the injury news, you can definitely take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. He will be in 98% of my cash game lineups as long as, you know, there's not somebody else glaring at me that I find is a better value. Just the workload, like you said, he checks all of the boxes. And not only Kenneth Farrow there, who the San Diego coaching staff actually really does like. They just said he's really raw. Jaquizz Rodgers also signed there this week, and I'm not worried about Jaquizz.
Jaquizz is in Tampa.
Not Jaquizz. I'm sorry, Dexter McCluster.
Ah, yeah.
I'm not worried about Dexter McCluster just because he's not good at football. He's going to see some snaps, but as long as Melvin Gordon is doing what he should be doing, there's no reason why he should. You're gonna use Dexter McCluster as like a give Melvin a breather type play.
McCluster, basically he's going to run a five-yard route up the middle from shotgun, turn his back to the defense, catch the pass, and then get hit by the defense. And he'll probably do that about five times. So,
and he might break, too.
I could see him maybe breaking one for 20-plus, but...
Oh, no, I was talking about his body might break.
Maybe a screen pass for 20-plus, but basically what I first mentioned with McCluster is what you're going to say.
Yeah. Melvin Gordon... I'm really, really, really finding it hard to play him in tournaments just because I could. And here's the thing is when you're talking about a back that's 30% owned on DraftKings, okay, and he could legitimately go for 125 and two, mm-hmm. That's not, we say there's, I don't want to say 50-50, but there's a better than 10% odds that he can do that, you know, because he's going to get a lot of the lion's share in the work, not only between the 20s, but in the red zones. If you're talking about a back that could do that, and then you're talking about if you were to build the chalkiest lineup possible, which you would play in cash games, which is how I start all of my lineups. I tried to build the absolute chalkiest lineups possible to try to get to know where the crowd is so I know where I want to pivot. Melvin Gordon does not check that box of people I cannot live with in my lineup. Like, those guys are Antonio Brown in a great matchup. A David Johnson in a great matchup, a Julio Jones in a great matchup, a Cam Newton in a great matchup. Not saying that they all have good matchups this week, but they have to be my high-level studs that could not only be a top five back, but can be the top scoring player at their position. And that's when I start to consider, okay, does the points scored outweigh the ownership? And guys like that, Cam, Antonio, Julio, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell when he gets in there, that's when I start not caring about ownership as much in tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a whole theory to it. I mean, look what the Colts defense did to C.J. Anderson last week, who was basically, you know, kind of Melvin Jr. in terms of, you know, ownership and what we were thinking was going to happen last week. But, Indy's got this secondary that's off the street, basically, and, you know, we can, we could, I guess, you know, target San Diego, you know, with the receivers and everything like that, but I don't know, I feel like the opportunity that Gordon has is too much, just, again, with the 20 carries and possibly getting a couple touches out of the backfield, and, you know, just having the goal line opportunity as well. I don't see anybody, you know, taking carries away from him or taking any of his work away for that matter. So for me, I'm going to play Gordon in tournaments. I don't think there's any doubt about that for me.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, one of my tournament teams that I usually always throw in is a cash game type lineup. So I will have him on one, but it's kind of one of those. You know, I'm gonna be seriously underweight just because I don't feel like I feel there is still a very good chance that, you know, Phillip Rivers throws the ball 40 times, and you know, this game ends up becoming a shootout up and down the field, and we're talking about, you know, guys like Travis Benjamin. Guys like Tyrell Williams, you know, guys like that, that could end a Hunter Henry if Antonio Gates is out, that nobody is talking about. You know, guys like that that, you know, are going to get a lot of work. And, you know, you've got the possibility of it being a negative game script. You know, I mean, I haven't looked at the line today, but the Chargers were let me flip here. I thought I had it. That was week two. The Chargers are 2.5-point dogs on the road. So there's a possibility that they could end up having to scrap the run altogether and throw in the fourth quarter. Now, I agree with you. He's in a premier spot, given the injury to Danny Woodhead. But I'm just saying, I think that for me and my style of play, I don't have a problem fading a guy like Melvin Gordon when he's projected to be the highest owned running back on the slate.
Yeah, and look, if you want to go back to his history, I mean, look, he had a really bad year last year, finished out very strong, you know, come on strong at the beginning of the year this year. You know, you could throw that in as reasons not to play him. I do think Melvin's going to get, man, this is going to be a crazy projection, but I want to say he's going to get 80% of his points in the first half. Like, he's going to do some damage in the first half. I think it's going to be a slow second half for him, because this is exactly how I see the game going. I see San Diego coming out strong, and then I just see Indy just dominating this game for the rest of the way. I really like Indy to win this game this week, and kind of probably by a touchdown, but, you know, a lot of people are going to be on the Chargers, and, you know, I have a feeling a lot of these injuries are going to come back to kind of bite them in the ass.
Yeah. Does the possibility of Andrew Luck sitting out because of his sore shoulder?
He ain't sitting.
I didn't think so. So I was wondering, because Chuck Pagano's having his press conference right now, and that was a big topic of conversation. So
yeah, he ain't coming.
All right, let's go to wide receivers here. We're going to stay in that same game. Travis Benjamin, 28% is the projected ownership. Good reasoning why. If you play Melvin Gordon, you play Travis Benjamin, that automatically should kind of narrow down who your quarterback should be, correct?
Sort of. I mean, yeah, if you want to go with that route. I'm off the Travis Benjamin train this week. I think he's going to be, I think, you know, the Colts are going to try to, they're going to try to do something to neutralize him, because he's been the guy so far that Rivers has been targeting. And, look, we've seen it plenty of times, a can't-miss guy. Sure, it could certainly be Melvin Gordon, but I'm going to put my money in saying that Travis Benjamin is the guy that doesn't produce as well this week. I think this could be a good Tyrell Williams week. I know, look, both of these guys have been doing great this season, so it's kind of crazy to say that. But if I had to take a bet of who's going to be the guy that doesn't put up the biggest amount of points to go with the most amount of hype it's going to be Travis Benjamin this weekend. I just have a feeling that the Colts are going to do everything they can to take him out of the game.
Yeah, and if you look at Travis Benjamin, I mean, his ownership percentage is 28. If you look at Tyrell Williams, his ownership projection is only around 12. Mm-hmm. And you're talking, I mean, you're talking a 14 or a 16-point difference right there. It's definitely something that is extremely interesting. I was all over Tyrell Williams last week, and in my mind it was for good reason. When Keenan Allen went out in that game, both Tyrell Williams and Travis Benjamin got the same amount of targets. Tyrell Williams, he runs like a freaking gazelle. And Travis Benjamin's most of Travis Benjamin's targets were within 5 to 7 yards of the line of scrimmage. You know, when you have 8 catches for 30-something yards, that tells me that you're working on bubble screen, short passes through the middle, you know, little outs and stuff like that. And really, you want especially over there on FanDuel, you want big play upside. You want touchdowns and. It kind of, I don't want to say blew up in my face last week, but I was definitely on the lower end of the spectrum just because I think I kind of underestimated how they were going to use Travis Benjamin. So,
another receiver from this game that's pretty interesting, T.Y. Hilton. Now, I was actually just talking to a good buddy of mine, Danny, before we started recording this podcast. And he was showing me a lineup. He's like, "Oh, what do you think about this?" And I said, and he had T.Y. Hilton in there. And I said, I don't know. I have a feeling Jason Verrett is going to be on him a lot. Well, silly goose me. In the meantime, in the time since I talked to Danny last, and since we just started recording this podcast, I'm reading here on 444.com that T.Y. Hilton actually lines up in the slot on 67% of his routes. And Verrett is only covering the slot about 5% of the time. So I think, I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be in the camp that I was in and thinking that Hilton could be shadowed by Verrett all day. So this could be an interesting option given the fact that, Dante Moncrief is going to be out for this game and for, I believe, the next 4 to 6 ones as well.
And everybody's going to go to Philip Dorsett. If you... I agree with you, and it's for the exact same reasons. Everybody's thinking of, Jacoby Verrett or Jacoby Verrett.
A lot of Jacoby on
the
line today.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm sitting here reading about Jacoby Brissett's not going to need surgery, Philip Dorsett is his projected ownership is double of what T.Y. Hilton's is going to be. Yeah. And what's hilarious is T.Y. Hilton, through 2 weeks, is getting 27.7% of his team's targets. He actually is second, tied for second with Jordan Matthews and Jarvis Landry with total amount of targets in the NFL. The one thing that does scare me is that his average yards per target is one of the lowest, not named Tavon Austin, in the top 10. So that's the one thing that does scare me a little bit with T.Y., but we know, and we've seen it before, T.Y. Hilton can break one from the slot. All he's got to do is run a little, slant up the middle. The linebacker's clear, and he's taking it to the house because I promise you he can outrun Manti Te'o, and with no Weddle in the secondary to kind of clean up everybody's mess in the front seven, you don't have to really worry about that. So I love T.Y. Hilton. I almost said Tavon Austin. I love T.Y. Hilton this week because of the whole narrative that is kind of going on with that one. So
Go ahead.
You can touch up on.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say you can finish up on T.Y.
That'll do.
Because I'm about to go to a different guy in here.
No, go ahead.
Per RotoWorld, and this just came out 40 minutes ago, Antonio Gates is listed as doubtful. He missed the Chargers practice today and is not expected to play against the Colts.
Wow.
Keep an eye out on this, because I think that if this happens, it's only going to inflate the ownership of Travis Benjamin and Melvin Gordon. But Hunter Henry is a rookie tight end out of Arkansas. He used to play quarterback there at Arkansas. The Chargers are absolutely in love with this guy. And I really, really, really like this as one of your pivots to a one of your cheap tight ends in tournaments to get you off of guys like Jacob Tammy. Who is the guy out of Philly? Name is escaping me. Trey Burton. It's going to get you off of guys like that, and nobody is going to own him. And make no mistake about it, Philip Rivers, when they get down in the red zone, they're going to look to mix it up. They're still going to pass. They're still going to run, but he is probably in line for some good red zone targets if Gates is out. So,
yep, I don't mind it at all. And the other side with things too with the Colts, I think both their tight ends are in play as well with Allen and the other guy that his name always escapes me.
Jack Doyle.
Jack Doyle. Yes, the boxer from basically the 1950s. That's what he sounds like. But I could certainly go with that route. I know tight end. Now we're just sticking with this game, right?
Oh, if you want to go with this game, we can go anywhere we want to.
All right, we'll stay with this game. But I have another tight end on the horizon that I'm going to have to pay up for.
Yeah, the tight end's actually kind of nice this week. I know if you're playing over there on the main slate on FanDuel, and you're sitting there looking at it, you've got Trey Burton on the cheap side. I think that Jason Witten is in a good spot against that beat up Chicago secondary. You know, you've got the revenge game narrative for Jordan Cameron. Which I don't buy into. And you've got your normal guys. You've got your Greg Olsen, your Jordan Reed, stuff like that. Full disclosure, on a lot of the teams that I've made, I have about even exposure to both Dwayne Allen and Jack Doyle.
Okay.
Just because of the way that the Colts run their offense, they involve the tight end a lot. And I was reading something on, I forgot where it was. I'd love to give them credit, but I forgot where it was. That in the red zone, Jack Doyle actually has the most targets from the 10-yard in out of any tight end this season.
Wow.
So...
it is two games, but we can take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's two games, but that just goes to show you that, he is... Andrew Luck, when they get down there, they are looking for him. He is an option. He's not just, a forgotten man or just somebody out there that's just got lucky. Now, is he going to catch two touchdowns every two games? Probably not, but he is an option, and... at tight end, where you can basically pay minimum price, and if he catches, three receptions for 40 yards, he's not, that doesn't kill you,
right?
Even in tournaments, because he's so cheap, he's minimum price.
Sure.
Okay. Let's go to quarterback. The highest projected ownership on a quarterback this weekend is, shocker, it's Philip Rivers.
Hey!
I think Philip Rivers, honestly, he's got a chance to hit the 404 mark this weekend. Now, if you're making multiple lineups, I talked a little bit in Slack the end of last week, I believe, about if you do like a three entry max, kind of making two of your lineups kind of work coinciding together and kind of correlate. Meaning, if I have a Philip Rivers team, I really think that game is going to shoot out, I want to have an Andrew Luck team. You know, that way if it does shoot out, I don't have just one team that's pushing up the leaderboard. I have two of them now.
I have a lot of interest in Andrew Luck, and it's just dependent on how I think this game's going to go. Again, you know, we've talked about this before, but an 0-2 team is probably one of the most dangerous teams to face in all of the NFL. Colts basically have their season on the line right now. And, you know, playing in the AFC South, I think you're afforded some, you know, casualties that a lot of other divisions aren't. But
especially the way the Texans looked last
indeed,
night.
Indeed, indeed. But, yeah, I really like Andrew Luck and this Indy team. You know, they're, of course, not going to do it on defense, so, of course, it's going to be on offense. Andrew Luck is my favorite quarterback this week, even more than Breeze, even more than Matt Ryan. So, yeah, I'm going to have to find a way to get up there in price. And, look, by the way, the fact that he is my favorite quarterback this week, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to have him in my lineup. If there is a way, god damn it, he will be there, though. I promise you that.
Yeah, and it's one of the... We talk about it all the time, you know, kind of paying up to be contrarian. He's got a relatively, you know, same floor that Philip Rivers is going to have this week. And that's kind of one of those things that you've got to, you know, really kind of take into consideration, because if not, then... You could be sitting there, and if Philip Rivers, you know, doesn't have as efficient of a day, and Aaron Luck just keeps going bananas and bonkers, because let's make no mistake about it, they are going to throw the ball, because I don't see...
Well, you don't like Frank Gore, huh?
I've heard a lot of Frank Gore talk, but I don't see Frank Gore getting... he could get two touchdowns.
Yeah.
One rushing, one receiving, he could get 75 yards. I think that's a realistic ceiling for him.
That's fine, because I see the Colts having like 6 touchdowns in this game. So
really, 6? You think it's going to be like a 40
game?
Huh? All right,
maybe 5. How about that? But no, I do see them putting up a massive offensive game.
Yeah, I mean, the total last time I checked was 51.5, and you would definitely probably take the over on that, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. Hopefully the Colts can get there by themselves. That'd be pretty awesome. But,
getting a little greedy, aren't we?
But, yeah, I mean, look, this line opened up at an Indy -3, and this is just one of the ones where you're like, huh? Like, this isn't how the season's been going so far. But there's actually a similar line last year where the Eagles traveled to the Jets, and we had the same thing where the Eagles were 0-2, Jets were 2-0, and everybody's kind of thinking, well, why the hell is Philly favored by 3? Look, Vegas knows about this 0-2 thing as well. It is a real thing. So
That was one of that was Sam Bradford's breakout game last year.
And Sproles had a great day that day.
And Jordan Matthews did as well.
And I'm gonna trust my boys in Vegas on this one, and just believe that Indy's gonna do a lot of this through the air. Again, Luck will cost you money. And look, the two top quarterbacks. Look, I nailed Breeze in week one, Cam in week two. Again, I'm saying it's gonna be Luck in week three. But look, the similarities with all those quarterbacks, they're very expensive. And again, I liken the quarterback position to a pitcher in baseball, where, you know, to get a lot, you're going to have to give a lot. And this is just the type of scenario that I would pay up for a guy like Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I think Luck actually has the second highest floor. I'm really, really debating hard whether or not to play him in cash games. But his price... over there on FanDuel is 87. His price on DraftKings is, what is it here? 76. I mean, I really, really, really want to.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure if I would, if I'm feeling comfortable enough with enough of the value that I would have to play
right.
in order to get to that point in cash. Now in tournaments, oh yeah, absolutely. He's one of my top.
Well, yeah.
He'd probably be my number two, just because if we're including the Monday slate, he's probably my number two. And you're going to get him at a lower ownership than you're going to get Phillip Rivers because of the fact that Phillip Rivers is, you know, what, $2,000 or $900 cheaper on fan or DraftKings. And well, let's see here. Gosh, where did he go?
Rivers?
He is
$700 on DraftKings.
Yeah, he's $700 less on FanDuel. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're going to get him at a cheaper price. And so he's going to be higher owned naturally.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, there's a couple receivers I hear I want to talk about as well. The first one is Stephon Diggs. Now, I don't think he's going to be highly, highly owned. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be highly owned by the general public because of all the publicity that he's gotten this week,
yep.
you know, with him, you know, helping Smiz win the Millie Maker last week.
I mean, yes, most importantly, helping Smiz win the Millie Maker, but, you know, also win the Vikings a football game, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, nobody wrote in the Washington Post or...
Smiz wins the mill.
Exactly, about Stephon Diggs helping the Vikings win their home opener. The only place they care about that is in Minnesota.
Right.
The rest of the world just cares about him helping a guy win $1 million. So I think he's going to be higher owned than he normally would be going into Carolina because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of what is going to hold his ownership percentage down under 20 is the fact that he is going into Carolina. I am not afraid of Carolina's defense or secondary or corners because of the fact that who they have back there now.
He's not afraid to take.
It's not Josh Norman.
Everybody.
So, and I with them being the Monday night game, I'm not afraid to play Stephon Diggs in cash games either.
Yeah, he is one of the top value plays on the board here today. I guess in terms of his price. Projected around there for somebody somewhere around like 16.5 according to 4.4.com or 4for4.com. But I'm not going to be a Diggs guy this week. I think this is kind of a very bad spot, especially with Carolina being a 7-point favorite today. Yes, Minnesota is going to have to throw the ball in order to move it, but believe that, you know, look, there's a huge mismatch there with Carolina's front seven against the offensive line there in Minnesota. So I think that's what's going to be the thing. Sam Bradford might die in this game again, but I'm not taking the shot on Diggs. Can't do it. Won't do it.
Can't do it. Won't do it.
Again, too, here's the other thing with Carolina. I mean, I see them playing this is going to be an ugly football game that we got going on here. It's, you know, it's going to be a lot of 8, 6, 4-yard type of plays in this one. I really don't see a lot of home run hitting type plays in this one, but that's the thing. If Carolina is going to possess this ball for most of the game, then obviously that's going to take away from the opportunities from Diggs. And best believe to Ron Rivera, the riverboat gambling Ron Rivera, he's going to do something to counteract everything and make sure that Diggs is not left in one-on-one coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. That would theoretically open up guys like Charles Johnson, Kyle Rudolph, even, you know, Jerick McKinnon out of the backfield. You know, I don't see this as a high-scoring game, but Diggs is still going to get his targets. His catch percentage on the targets he receives is absolutely phenomenal so far this year. Now, granted, it's probably going to come down a little bit. It's not going to stay as high as it is right now. But for all that purpose, because of the targets, I don't mind him on any format tonight or this week. Next one is going to be Jarvis Landry.
Yes.
Now, we have a weird situation going on with this one. The Dolphins cannot run the ball.
Oh, hell no.
Unless they run it with a guy by the name of Ryan Tannehill.
Right.
As much as I loved D.D. Williams in college at OU, he is not, whether it be because he's a knucklehead or because he's not good or because, you know, they've had quote-unquote better talent ahead of him or whatever it is, he has flashes but in good games, but he'll only have like one a year. I think he's going to be, because of the fact that he was inactive last week, he was a healthy scratch, I think he's going to be so far down on the pecking order that I'm not worried about him. Jay Ajayi is not good. He has not shown me anything to warrant being the hype that he was getting before the Dolphins signed Arian Foster. Okay. Kenyon, is it Kenyon Drake?
Yes, I believe so. Jay Drake. No, you're right. Kenyon Drake.
Kenyon Drake is also in the mix there. You've got, there's another guy. Isaiah Pede is also in there. I mean, this is just, it's so much of a, this is almost as bad as the Oakland backfield right now. Except here's the problem, is none of them are good. and I would stand by that.
Yeah.
But they do play the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather is forecasting to get a little bit worse the closer we get to kick.
I don't think that matters. I believe the Dolphins' new stadium has a roof over their head. I believe so. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that.
Okay, I did not know that. I knew they were opening up a new stadium, but I did not...
Again, don't quote me on that. I'm going to check it out right now.
Oh, okay, I was checking
it out. Oh, yeah. When you search for Google... Yeah, there's a roof.
Yeah, it looks like it's a freaking space shuttle, and it's a tennis court on top.
Yeah.
If I've got the right picture.
It must be retractable, like a baseball stadium, because they got a...
Or they wanted it to look like Jerry Jones's... Field.
You know what? They gotta have a roof in there. Whatever. It's not gonna matter. Browns suck.
Yeah, but, you know, if you don't have somebody to attack it with, then why does it matter? You know? I mean, does that not kind of make sense a little bit?
Oh, no, it totally makes sense. And even if it didn't, I'd say it does, so you don't sound worse for it. You know, Mom. No, I got you.
My whole thing is, you know, it actually doesn't look like it covers the field. Looks like it just covers the fans. And only about 85% of them.
No, you're right. It said Dolphins' new grass field designed to thrive while canopy keeps fans. And then it just goes off the page. But yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't even deserve a click. So yeah, it's something we got to pay attention to now. The weather. But Ryan Tannehill is the leading rusher on the Miami Dolphins.
No surprise.
And it's not like he's averaging close to 75 yards a game either. He's averaging like 35.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's only two games, but I believe that they're going to use Jarvis Landry as an extension of the running game. And he is, like I said, tied for second in targets over the course of the season so far with... Jordan Matthews and T.Y. Hilton. The difference between his and theirs is he's caught 17 of the 23 compared to Jordan Matthews catching 13 and T.Y. Hilton catching 10.
Yeah, Jarvis Landry actually had two really good matchups to start the season, and you're going to say, what? But yeah, against the Seahawks and against the Patriots, yeah, those are two great matchups for slot receivers. The Seahawks, obviously, they have all these amazing corners there on the outside, but in the middle of the field, typically the way to attack them is with the slot and via the tight end. And the Patriots, too, also have a rookie cornerback out there, playing in the slot. So teams are, good passing teams are competent passing teams, unlike the Houston Texans, are probably going to be able to take advantage of that, as we saw earlier in the season with Larry Fitzgerald and then Jarvis Landry in week two. But, yeah, look, there's no – I don't care. There's nobody to stop anybody on this Cleveland Browns defense. And everything you
– their front seven isn't as bad as it is. Hold on. Let me finish that thought. Their front seven isn't as bad as people want to make
they're
it.
They're the worst defense in the NFL.
As a whole? Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Anywho. Well, yeah, all right. So that even if their front seven is going to be competent, then sure. Short passes from Tannehill to Landry all day. But again, with no running game and all that in motion, yeah, I got Landry pretty much everywhere. And Kevin showed us an example of somebody's lineup before from FantasyDraft.com's Thursday through Monday contest. Jarvis Landry was 72% owned in the contest.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
expect that to be there.
I think your tournament pivot, depending on weather. Could be Rishard Matthews.
Okay.
I
like Tajay Sharp.
Yeah, Tajay Sharp's a good one, too. He was the next guy I was just talking about in the same game. Because if the Dolphins can't run, they're going to throw it. And Jarvis Landry can't take 40 targets, can he?
Sure, why not?
Sorry, not Rishard Matthews. He just – they had Rishard Matthews last year. Devontae Parker, sorry. I also think in tournaments because of his price and everything, at least over there on DraftKings, I wouldn't play him on FanDuel because he's got the ability to get deep. Kenny Stills makes for a nice tournament option as well, as long as the weather, because that's going to get you low ownership. It's still going to get you exposure to this passing game. I agree with you. Jarvis Landry, him and Stephon Diggs are in the basis of my cash game lineups. I don't have any problems playing them in tournaments either. Their ownership percentage is not high enough for me to warrant a consideration of a fade due to their volume, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Sure.
I love both of those guys this week.
And also I want to say too, just because, do you know what sort of rain, like, is this going to be a monsoon or are we just getting some
I'm actually looking that up as you were talking.
Okay, because I'm going to say, like, if there's a little bit of drizzle, that's not going to affect the passing game that much. Like, maybe wet ball, wet hands for maybe a potential catch or two, okay, but it's not the worst thing in the world for it to be raining because,
for
a defender, it's a lot harder for them to kind of pivot and track where they're going on a wet field, because obviously the receiver knows where they're going. The defender is the one that's at risk in this scenario. Basically, where's this guy going? All right, if he's got to make up for a step, he's not going to get that makeup step with the wet ground out there. So take that into consideration.
Yeah, It's exactly right. I think it's one of those that if it's a monsoon, then obviously, you want to back off on it a little bit. But from the looks of it, it looks like it's just kind of scattered thunderstorms. I'm trying to get an hourly kind of picture on this. They tip at noon my time on Sunday, right?
Yep.
So that's 6 a.m. It just looks like scattered thunderstorms all throughout the game and stuff. So it could be, hit and miss. So I don't, as of right now, I don't think there's any reason to really, really kind of shy off of that.
Fair enough.
So obviously we'll have to wait and see what it looks like Sunday morning.
Yep.
An interesting note from this game.
Okay.
And you're going to absolutely laugh at me. Do you want to know who the Cleveland Browns' leading target getter is?
It's going to be something weird. But I get it had to be Coleman. Let's go with Andrew Hawkins.
Wrong answer. It is Terrell Pryor.
Oh, okay.
17 targets.
I was wrong on purpose for the fact of entertainment.
The sake of the pod.
Correct,
yeah.
Correct.
He's averaging almost 6 yards per target. That's basically, you know, when he catches the ball, he's getting at least 6 yards. He averages close to now. Granted, he's had RG3 and Josh McCown throwing to him, and now he gets Cody Kessler. So that would be like a Millie Maker punt play type play, but he's going to get peppered with targets. You know, they're going to be behind. They're going to be throwing the ball. They can't run Isaiah Crowell into the ground as much as they would want to because it takes up too much time. But it's just something to kind of watch out for is the development of Terrell Pryor. I'm not saying play him. Just keep an eye out on the development throughout the season. The last guy that I want to talk about at the wide receiver position was Tajae Sharpe. Tajae Sharpe was the darling that we fell in love with during the preseason. Came out in week one and absolutely just dominated Marcus Mariota's targets. Just was absolutely just... it was unbelievable how many targets he would get. Kind of fell off a little bit last week because they wanted to get Delanie Walker into the mix. Now, Delanie Walker is still going to get his. Don't get me wrong. He still will get his targets. But Tajae Sharpe last week still got, where did he go? 7 targets. He caught 4 of them. He only had 33 yards.
Very bad matchup for him, though.
But that's exactly what I was about to say. It was not a good matchup at all. He had 11 targets his first week. So as far as how many targets he needs to get a reception, he's in the top 15, and it's just above 1.5 targets per reception that he's getting. That is very, very good. That's up there with guys like, you know, Larry Fitzgerald and Demaryius Thomas and Cole Beasley and, you know, Michael Crabtree, Julian Edelman, Willie Snead, Travis Benjamin. That's the type of consistency and efficiency that he's getting. And Marcus Mariota looks for him. Look, it's in the passing game, it's basically two guys. And then it's Rishard Matthews coming up on a close third. The problem I have with this game is Oakland is about as bad of a defense as Cleveland is, and I don't see them. I see them wanting to run the ball as much as possible to maybe keep Khalil Mack off of Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, the one for Sharp here. So if he draws Sean Smith, this is pretty interesting. 63 routes this season. Smith is allowing 1.02 fantasy points per route. Very interesting there. So that's pretty awesome. So basically here.
Now, I wonder how many of it is skewed by the Brandon Cook's 98-yard touchdown.
I'm sure a lot of it. I'm sure a lot of it, but still, I mean, he's had plenty of other routes run against him. I mean, Cook's had a great day. But, you know, here's the other thing. Sharp, too, drawn that very tough assignment against the Lions. I'm very interested to see what the ownership percentage is this week because, again, we know we have a whole flock of sheep that go towards the recency bias. So, you know, Sharp is very, very affordable, too, going against one of the worst corners in the league this week at 4,700. Even on the other side of the field, too, I really like Maury Cooper and Michael Crabtree. They both have very good matchups. Very competent quarterback throwing to them as well. I think either guy could be just an absolute stud this week. So, I mean, I think with this game as a whole, are you thinking shootout? What are you thinking here?
I think it's got sneaky shootout potential. My favorite play from this game that I'm finding myself on is actually DeMarco Murray.
Okay.
Just because, like I said, I think that they're going to want to try to slow down the pass rush and keep Khalil Mack away from Marcus Mariota. You know, I can see a lot of dump offs. You know, as far as targets are concerned, for running backs, DeMarco Murray's tied with D'Angelo Williams for second. with 14, only one behind TJ Yeldon. And both of his touchdowns in week one came off of receptions. So, I mean, he's being targeted more than guys like David Johnson, James White, Duke Johnson, Theo Riddick, by Marcus Mariota, and I think it's not going to change. Plus, you get the added ability of, rushing on top of that. And as much as people don't want to believe it because of their love infatuation with Derrick Henry, make no mistake about it, this is DeMarco Murray's backfield right now.
Oh, yeah. And they say Chip Kelly did nothing for DeMarco Murray. He taught him some pass
catching.
Gave
him a year off?
Gave him some pass catching skills and lots of rest last.
He caught the ball in Dallas. He just wasn't utilized like that as much. He's always had the ability.
He's like Dexter McCluster.
Dude,
steroids.
He did that in college.
Like, he's amazing.
He did that in college, though.
Not college. Everybody's doing it.
Okay. Anyways, that's my favorite play in there. Now, I've got a little bit of exposure to Michael Crabtree. I find myself on Crabtree more than I do Amari Cooper, not because of lack of talent or anything. It's just kind of where the roster build is ending up, and that's the price range I usually find myself in. I originally went into this thinking that Marcus Mariota was cash game viable. I don't think that's true now, at least in my opinion, just because of the floor of guys like Andrew Luck, Phillip Rivers, and the projected ceiling of those as well. But, I think he's a good tournament play. But, man, I like Tajae Sharpe. I was all over him in week one. I kind of was pulled back the reins a little bit in week two because of what he did. I knew the ownership percentage was going to be up there. But I can't see myself being in that mid-range price for wide receivers in cash games or tournaments for all of them. I want to pay up somewhere.
I thought we weren't talking about cash games.
In tournaments, I mean. Sorry, not in cash. In tournaments. Because would we agree that the ideal cash game build, so we know where the ownership percentage is going to be TJ Yeldon, Stephon Diggs, or Jarvis Landry,
Gordon?
Two. Oh, yeah, sorry, Melvin Gordon, not TJ Yeldon.
What's up with you and your names today, man?
Dude, it's so many names going through my head.
It's a Friday, I know.
And then you've got guys like D'Angelo Williams and, Charles Sims at their running back, Theo Riddick. It's going to be to save on running back. So I think that I'm going to pay up at running back at least in one of the spots and pay up for maybe two primo wide receivers in tournaments to get myself completely off of the conventional roster construction this year.
I don't remember where I heard it, but I believe it was from last year. The average price for running backs in winning million maker lineups last year was something like $4,500. Very interesting.
For RB2s?
No, just running backs in general.
Huh, that's odd.
Yeah. Have no idea where I heard it. I mean, look, I wasn't sleeping one night and it came to me in my dreams. I heard it somewhere. I have no idea where I heard it.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's just odd that it would be so low, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what it is, too. When you think back to lineups, I mean, we typically try not to go with the David Johnsons or AP when he was healthy or something like that. We just try to find cheap running backs, that are in great positions. That way we could pay up for the receivers. I mean, that's typically how it's been going lately. But I find it interesting, too, the one common thread that I found this year with the two winning Millie Maker lineups was that you had the quarterback and then, I believe, two receivers, whether it was two receivers or one receiver, one tight end. in both the lineups as well.
Yeah, it's made its way from just your conventional quarterback wide receiver stack to a quarterback, you know, either one wide receiver, one tight end, wide receiver one, wide receiver two, running back, wide receiver, paired with that. So
dare I say, Andy Luck, T.Y. Hilton, Jack Doyle? Muhahaha.
Yeah, I think that could be a good possibility as well.
All right.
I have another one that's sneaky, but I have to save it for my article that's coming out.
Show.
So, okay. Let's touch on the defense here.
What about tight ends?
Oh, well, yeah.
Tight ends are people too.
tight end. Trying to look and see who the highest projected ownership on tight end is going to be, and it looks like it's Dennis Pitta. But he's not. Yeah, it's Dennis Pitta. But he's not even over 10%, so I don't really think that. Yeah, I don't really think that you have to worry about ownership percentage at tight end this week. I will tell you this, that a lot of people are probably going to try to save on tight end. They're going to go with the Dennis Pitta. They're going to go with the Trey Burton types. You can sneak in there and probably get a Jack Doyle. But if you want to pay up at tight end and get a Delanie Walker, a Greg Olsen, a Jordan Reed, I think you're going to get a lot lower ownership percentage in tournaments off of the higher priced tight ends.
Jordan Reed, my man, got to be my man this week. Giants absolutely suck at going against tight ends. You know, $6,500 isn't a very steep price for Jordan Reed, but, I mean, look, against the Giants last season, I pulled up the numbers, he had 14 catches for 194 yards, did not get in the end zone in either of those two games against them, but you can definitely see where the production is right there. Another option that I also like, Jason Witten, too, because we've seen Dak Prescott early this season. You know, that first game wasn't necessarily throwing the ball down the field. Second, took a couple more chances, but Chicago's also another team that's not very good at covering the tight end, so I would not mind going with some Witten in this game. I think he's a kind of a guy that's going to flow below the radar, and especially for those 4 o'clock to Monday night slates, really like Witten there.
Yeah, and of course, if you're going on Monday night, then you've got the added savings of Jacob Tammy after what he did last week as well. So, you know, guys like Travis Kelce, he's not getting talked about. I mean, I guess Colby Fleener's got a good matchup, but he can't seem to catch the ball, so I wouldn't really worry about that. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go. I don't think you have to really worry about ownership percentage at tight end.
Cameron revenge game.
Yeah, I mean, we've already mentioned that, and I don't think that's anything worth mentioning three times on the podcast.
Didn't he score a touchdown last week, Cameron?
He did.
What a son of a bitch.
Yep. So, all right, let's go to defense here. Miami. They are the highest projected ownership, and the ownership is absolutely just god-awfully high. 28% for a defense going against a third-string rookie quarterback that just a week and a half ago was, I don't want to say blasted in public, but was notified to the media that he was nowhere near ready to be a starting NFL quarterback.
This was 4 days before the week 2 game, right?
Yeah, it was last Wednesday.
All right. So it wasn't the next day after.
Yeah, this wasn't like the day after.
To play? No.
Yeah, this wasn't the day after. Now, you know, all of a sudden, you know, that those 10 days, Al, those 10 days, he did a lot of studying.
I mean,
he popped some Addies and drank some Red Bull and got with Shanae and Shaliqua, and he did some studying.
I mean,
USC style. I wonder if Matt Leinart helped him out.
Yeah. He's been walking around the complex, right? Like he's a 5-year veteran. I mean,
oh, I know. He's the the poise and the
moxie.
Aura and the moxie that he has shown since those comments have just absolutely just resonated from the compound of the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, you've got Ndamukong Suh, Mario Williams, Cameron Jordan. I mean, yeah, out of the fact that you've got the threat of Isaiah Crowell and Terrell Pryor, there's a reason why they're the highest owned projected defense of the week.
It's their opponent. But here's the thing. Now, Miami's defense statistically done pretty well with the exception of the first three drives in New England last week. But was week one an aberration now that we've seen what Seattle's offense has done the first 2 weeks? And, you know, and then...
Well, I've said it, like, for the last 2 weeks. Where you can make money with Seattle is not playing the Seattle offensive guys or even the defense. It's targeting them because they usually take about 5, 6, 7 weeks to actually get into the flow of the season for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And that's when their offensive efficiency numbers start really, really skyrocketing. I think, honestly, we can't take anything away from... I don't think they're as bad as they looked on the first couple drives against Miami or against New England, and I don't think they're as good as they looked against Seattle. I think they're somewhere in between, but it's not like this Cleveland Brown team is anywhere in between the Seahawks and the Patriots offense.
Let me ask you something. Do you think that going with Miami is the sucker's play this week?
In tournaments?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. But I'm still going to say it. But on the strength of the fact that Cleveland's definitely going to run this ball a lot. Like, I don't see them trying to... Like, I really don't see them taking many chances at all. Like, I see for... Every drive that's not in the 2 minute warning of the first and second half, first down run, second down run, and then third down, maybe like a short pass play or something like that. So yeah, they might keep the points in check like that, but I really don't see too many like turnovers coming from them this week. And maybe the rain could play a different part with that, but when you pick the Miami defense, I think you're kind of just getting lazy in the fact that, all right, we're not going to force many turnovers and touchdowns and things like that. Like, I legitimately can see Cleveland running backs getting 40 carries in this game combined.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to carry the ball 40 times.
I'm not saying one person. I'm just saying maybe a combination of Crowell, and also the Duke man, but maybe. I'm just saying, like, a combined effort from the running backs, I could see that happen.
Yeah, I think he's a sucker's play. Or not he.
All
I think
11
this
of those.
Is a sucker. Now, granted, you don't think that way for cash games.
Right.
But for tournaments, absolutely. I've got my eye on a couple other ones. And
let us talk about them.
Yes, we shall.
And by the way, it's not a sucker's bet going with Miami.
That's a good state bet.
The geek is, you know, he was saying like all in on Miami defense. And yes, honestly, in majority of lineups, you should have the Dolphins defense in there. But in order to take down one of these massive multi-entry tournaments, I can guarantee you the Dolphins defense will not be the one in the winning lineup.
Yep, I can 100% agree with that. The second highest owned projected defense over there on DraftKings this week is, and it kind of makes me throw up in my mouth,
Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
No, absolutely not. But I can kind of get the logic behind it. I think it's more of a risk, obviously. I think there is a better defense out there that we'll get to here in a second, but is Dallas.
Yeah, I see that. 11%.
Now, here's kind of the reasoning behind it.
You're off in my mouth, too.
Let's make no mistake about it. Dallas's defense is not sexy. It's not good. Brian Hoyer is not a... Brian Hoyer is not... he's not a rookie quarterback. I mean, this is a guy that DeAndre Hopkins and Josh Brown have had good seasons, like top 15 wide receiver seasons, with Brian Hoyer as their quarterback.
I was going to say, after you said Brian Hoyer is not a rookie quarterback, don't tell that to the Chiefs in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, Brian Hoyer is somebody who does not hurt, in my opinion, Alshon Jeffrey's fantasy value. Brian Hoyer does throw interceptions. With that said, this Dallas Cowboys defense, besides, like, Sean Lee, is not at full strength. Brandon Carr is probably one of the higher paid bad corners in the league. He kind of absolutely robbed. He had that one good season in Kansas City, then he robbed Dallas for everything. Morris Claiborne is actually played very, very well the first 2 weeks. I've been thoroughly impressed.
Well, I actually wanted to the Bucs the year he got drafted, but.
Barry Church has played well as well. So they have some pieces, and what makes them even more appealing is the fact that this Dallas Cowboys offense should be able to do pretty much whatever they want against the even more depleted. If we thought that the Chicago Bears defense was bad going into last week, just wait till you see them this week. Because I think they got, like, what, 8 or 9 guys hurt just in last week's game alone. So that has a lot of the appeal to go with it. The fact that they're going to be able to do whatever they want and kind of control the clock if they choose to do so, which we've seen that absolutely help the Philadelphia Eagles defense. You know, when you go from being on the field for 71 plays to 51 plays, all of a sudden your defensive efficiency, lo and behold, and wow, it's a shocker, it goes up. So I don't mind it. I see it. It just kind of makes me throw up a little bit in my mouth.
Okay, and look, for the same reasons of Dallas's ball control offense, you get nervous, and then you kind of lick the chops as well, because number one, all right, if Dallas has the ball for so long, that's not going to give, you know, the Dallas defense the opportunity to make as many plays. But on the other hand, maybe that forces the Bears into worse plays when they actually do get the opportunity to make those plays. So that's certainly two different ways of looking at it. So you're going to have that Miami defense ridiculously high owned, and for tournaments, I'm starting to back off, but the one defense that I'm really starting to like a lot this week is the Cincinnati Bengals. This is going to be their home opener here, and look, we've already seen it with, Trevor Siemian, how, this guy can certainly, he can throw the ball to the other team. We've certainly seen it already. I mean, week one.
Yeah, he should have 2 more interceptions. He should have had 2 more last week, but the Colts secondary can't hold on to the ball either.
Week one there against Carolina, I mean, look, understandably, he had a very hard time, but even against this Colts defense last week, too. And here's another thing for Siemian, going on the road for the first time. Cincinnati's got a very good defense, pretty good crowd there as well, very underrated crowd. But I really like Cincinnati here. We've already heard reports of Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders saying that they want the ball more. And you know what happens in this. I was, last night, I was playing PlayStation with a buddy of mine, NHL 17. So I got to bring this up because it coincides. So basically I'm like, hey, Frank, stop calling for the pass from the computer all the time. Like, he just does this shit all the time, and it pisses me off. So I tell him, hey, Frank, stop doing it. So you know what happens when Frank's wide open, and after I tell him this, he's not calling for the pass anymore. So I'm like, dude, you need to be doing this at the right time. So So basically, you know, if I were telling him, hey, Frank, give me the puck, give me the puck, you know, he would start giving it to me basically every time that he got the puck. So I have a feeling this week, too, we're going to see Semien try to force a lot of balls into Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas that don't necessarily need to be going there, and he's going to make for a lot of turnovers here. I think the most opportunistic defense of the week is going to be Cincinnati.
Oh, no, the most opportunistic ones are going to be the ones in that Indy-San Diego game. Unfortunately, I don't think they'll be able to capitalize off of that. So, because when you're talking about, you know, possibly 100 pass attempts and dropbacks, I mean, that's it. You're talking about some opportunity there. But, you stole my thunder there. I was actually kind of thinking there. Another one to kind of, and this is going to make people go, kind of like
well,
Tim the Tool Man Taylor. I really am starting to like San Francisco.
Ooh.
Depending on the reports coming out of Russell Wilson, I'm really, really, really starting to like San Francisco, mainly because they do have a decent front seven. You know, Thomas Rawls is a game time decision. You know, yes, Russell Wilson has practiced this week and everything should be good, but it's not like that offense has really been performing at a high efficiency type level. And these NFC West games always are just knockdown, drag out, low scoring, pop them in your mouth games. And I don't think that San Francisco defense is as bad as we thought it was going into the year. Kind of like I said with the Rams defense going into Seattle last week or facing Seattle last week. I think it's San Francisco this week for me. And the more I think about it, the more I end up loving them because of the way that the Seattle offense has performed this year.
Fair enough. I just want to talk about the flip side real quick with Chip Kelly's offense going up against Seattle. I do think that the Seahawks are a good option on defense. Now, I'm not going to be paying up that much to get him, but with Chip Kelly's offense, you get a higher volume of plays, which leads to more opportunities for sacks, interceptions, things of that nature. I don't think that, you know, San Francisco is going to move the ball that well on Seattle, so this is where, again, another opportunistic defense comes into play. I do think Arizona against Tyrod Taylor and that offense could certainly be another great option. However, that's going to cost you a lot of money. But the one defense that's been popping up, and I'm getting very nervous about this because I don't like when people start picking my team, but I've heard a lot of talk about the Buccaneers this week. Don't do it, my friends, all right? They're not good at home. They're a much better road team than they are at home. I don't know why.
Yeah, I can, but see here, can you see it, though?
Yeah, I know exactly.
Can you see the narratives behind it, or not the narratives, the reasoning kind of behind it, though?
And, you know, look, the Rams offense hasn't done a damn, they haven't scored a touchdown yet. Of course they're going to score. Nobody goes 3 weeks in a row without scoring a touchdown. Like, it's going to happen.
But if it's anybody, it's going to be Jeff Fisher's Rams.
Yeah, of course. No. They're scoring. They're probably going to score two this week, but it's going to be through the air. Look, the Bucs' run defense is amazing, so no, Todd Gurley is not going to be a great play. But I, you know, even when we were talking about wide receivers, failed to mention Bayonne boy, Kenny Britt, actually a pretty good option here, going up against the Tampa Bay Bucs. I don't put all your chips in the Tampa Bay bucket here. They've disappointed mightily at home over the last couple of years, so I don't like it here.
Yeah, I can see it. I don't trust. I don't think that the Rams can pass the ball. I think they're going to try to do the Gidget and Gadget plays with Tavon Austin. Maybe Lance Kendricks gets a couple targets downfield a little bit. Maybe Kenny Britt does as well. They're going to run Todd Gurley, you know, 25-plus times. I do think Todd Gurley makes for a sneaky tournament play just because he's not going to be owned, and he's got big playability. All he's got to do is bust one, guys. That's all he needs. So, I mean, it is definitely a possibility, but I can see Tampa, but I can see where you're coming from as well. It's kind of the same thing, you know, with the Cowboys. So, guys, there's no sure thing at defense, but any time a defense is projected to be over 25% owned, if there's other viable options, especially for cheaper, then I'm definitely not scared to take them.
And by the way, top defense in the Monday through Thursday slate, Patriots, 12% owned.
Yep. So,
hey, one more play that I did not even talk about, since we were talking about the Bengals, Gio Bernard this week, great PPR option at running back out there. You're going to have Aqib Talib on A.J. Green, which is going to be a tough matchup for Green. You got a very tough Broncos defense, but Jeremy Hill's certainly not going to be doing much this week going up against that front seven there of the Broncos. But Gio Bernard for some PPR this week, I like it.
Okay. All right, we're at an hour and 25, so we're going to be out in about 5 minutes. I do want to play a game, though.
Oh, I love games. Okay. Except
I want to go for the highest scoring quarterback wide receiver combo that we think is going to be under 10% owned for both of them. So, like, okay, you know, if Dak Prescott's 9 and Dez Bryant is 8, then that would still be good.
All right, so under-owned. Oh, I got you. Blake,
under 10%.
Blake Bortles.
The highest scoring.
Blake Bortles combo. And Allen Robinson.
Ooh.
Now, is that 10 combined?
No.
Okay.
No, not 10.
Blake Bortles and Allen. I really like Allen Robinson a lot this week, since everybody's going to be off him and hasn't had that major game yet. Baltimore can certainly give up a deep play. And,
I think Allen Robinson's going to be over 10%, though.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think he's burned so many people these first 2 weeks.
Okay. I'll give you that. I think it's going to be Eli Manning and Odell Beckham.
Okay. All right.
Yep. Because everybody is... I haven't heard a lot of people talk about the fact that, you know, Odell Beckham would have had 2 touchdowns last year if it wasn't for the fact that he dropped one on, like, the first play of the game.
I said, hey, I owned him across the board last year in that matchup.
I had a lot of Odell Beckham.
I said, you know what? I'm going with it. I flipped the hell out when he dropped that one in the first quarter. But you know what? This is kind of like a boxing match, you know? We got Odell, or Norman won the first matchup. I could see ODB winning this one. And then we'll see in, I believe it's week 17 for the third rendition of this ODB Norman battle.
Yep. I honestly, I have different reasons that I'll talk about probably tomorrow on why I'm going with it. And if you know where I'm going with this and know me, then that's probably why. So. That's going to do it for us today. Make sure you guys get into the DraftKings DFS Army League. It's only $2, top 20 payouts. It's GPP style. It's 100 players. So make sure you jump in there. If you're not a member of the DFS Army, then you need to become one.
Yeah.
So you can get into these contests like this.
All in recruit.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a lot of fun. Make sure you guys are playing over there on Fantasy Draft, FanDuel, and look for my Bridging the Gap article to be out in the morning. I kind of wait for Kevin to put out his plays before I really get into that one. So I'll be working on that this afternoon and this evening, and it should be out in the morning.
Yeah, and fair warning for all the baseball folks out there to say, no more written material for the rest of the baseball season. So me and Keith going to have, well, I'm going to have a nice written break until basketball season. The basketball season, those full game report updates, they are a-coming.
Yep, baseball's pretty much done for us. We're no more pods. We're going to start, we have to start preparing for basketball. We're working on some stuff. I'm working with Scani on a model. I'm working with another guy to get some more tools kind of put together.
A lot of Nets preseason games watching coming up.
Yep, we got a lot of preseason to watch. I definitely do because I've got to figure out what the freaking Thunder are going to do without Kevin Durant.
So how excited are you about this T-Rob, Brooke Lopez 4-5 the Nets are going to have going on?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
-3.
I was going to say a 1. I'm a little excited, but not. It's not the the basis of my day.
T-Rob naked is where it's at.
There you go. But yeah, we've got a lot of, we're going to be doing a lot of great stuff for basketball. I'll have some contrarian articles that come out on the big tournament slates, along with the return of Boomers Bombers in the cheat sheets. If you liked Boomers Ballers, Boomers Bombers is where it started. Say that 15 times fast. All right, guys, that's going to do it for today. Al, good luck this season. I'll talk to you later.
All right, thank you.
Later, guys.